Hello, this is Derek Frost from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the headline, Skyline Changer. Kane surgically moves ahead on Smoky Hollow Project. One of Raleigh's most ambitious downtown development projects is battling through the infrastructure and government approval challenges that many say could be the blueprint of greenlighting multi-phase developments in the future. And this article is written by Caleb Harshberger. One of Raleigh's most ambitious downtown developments is rising along Peace Street, and one of the developers driving the project says there is even more to come. The project along Peace and West Streets on the northern entrance to downtown, called Smoky Hollow by developers Kane Realty and Williams Realty, has already begun transforming the district into a dense urban center as bigger mixed-use projects continue to pop up all across the city. But Kane Realty Corporation Chairman and CEO John Kane says this isn't the end of the partners' plans for the site. It won't be the last phase, Kane says. We haven't really started our planning for that area. The Smoky Hollow name and ambitious nature of the project underscore the dramatic changes downtown. Smoky Hollow was a working-class neighborhood near the city's mills before a commercial district was created in the 1960s. The development also highlights how developers are increasingly seeking to go vertical as land prices rise and rents for Class A office space increase. Phase 3 of Smoky Hollow was recently rezoned to allow for the development of a 40-story tower, which would be the tallest in the city. The 33-story PNC Plaza is currently Raleigh's tallest building. It's one of several projects asking for a 40-story limit, including requests from Go Triangle and the Wilmington-based Zimmer Development Company to bring the same development height to properties they own in the city. All of this comes at a time when development is booming in downtown Raleigh, and Smoky Hollow is providing a glimpse of what's to come. A recent report by the Downtown Raleigh Association found that the city has seen $3 billion in development completed or under construction since 2005, with another $2.5 billion in the pipeline. Meanwhile, office space seems to fill as fast as builders can deliver it. Office occupancy rates are at 96.2%, and rental rates have been rising all year, with a new tower at North Hills seeking $40 per square foot. Throughout the city, developers are working to capitalize on the soaring economy with plans for more ambitious mixed-use projects. Companies submit plans for new towers and mixed-use projects every month, while firms such as the Fallon Company, Hoffman & Associates, and Heritage Properties already have begun work on ambitious projects of their own. The plans for Smoky Hollow are more expansive than previously known. Kane says the developers have the land for a fourth phase, though they've run up against county-owned properties. County records show Williams Realty owns nearly 3 acres across North Harrington Street from Smoky Hollow's Phase 3. That means more development is likely for an area already packed with cranes, steel beams, and orange cones marking roadwork. And it means a new look for a northern gateway once better known for used car lots and industrial buildings. Construction on Phase 1, dubbed Peace, began last year, with plans calling for 225,000 square feet of Class A office space, 40,000 square feet of retail, all across 12 stories, anchored by a much-awaited Publix grocery store. The first phase, along with Publix, is scheduled to open next year. Phase 2 began construction this summer. The second phase features two 10-story buildings and 280 residential units, 225,000 square feet of Class A office space, and 50,000 square feet of ground floor restaurant and retail space. Kane Realty President Mike Smith believes the broader goal of the next phase is to create a sense of place and link the new development to Glenwood South with a pedestrian-friendly feel. Both phases are set to open in mid to late 2020. The third phase could rise dramatically taller in what would be a signature element along the northern entrance to downtown. The council approved the rezoning after months of back and forth, specifically around the inclusion of affordable housing. While the partners had offered to provide $1 million to the city's affordable housing fund, they ultimately agreed to include affordable housing in the plan, with three options to choose from. While rezoning, the third phase opened the door to the next stages of development, company officials have expressed concerns. It introduces a whole new level of financing risk that we're honestly not sure how we'll navigate, said Bonner Gaylord, managing director of operations for Kane. Before the rezoning, the property was zoned for up to just 12 stories of development. Construction on this phase is not expected to begin until after the first two are complete. We're very excited about it, Gaylord says. Our viewpoint is to be sustainable. Our city needs to grow up, not out. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Chimney Swifts find a safe haven in downtown Raleigh. Austin, Texas is known for its bats that live under the Congress Avenue Bridge, and now a Raleigh food hall is looking to have a spectacle of its own. The Transfer Company Food Hall will leave its chimneys open and available to chimney swifts, the birds that fly around during the day but love to rest in chimneys at night. They migrate to South America for the winter. Transfer owners Jason Queen, Matt Flynn, and Fred Belladin renovated a 50,000-square-foot bus depot and turned it into a food and beverage spot that is now teeming with people. Transfer, which opened in December, includes the popular Burial Beer and is located in the southeast corner of downtown Raleigh. The goal is also to make it friendly to the chimney swifts as they journey south for the winter. The food hall owners decided to keep the chimney open after John Connors, a board member of the Wake Audubon Society, contacted them about the issue. Chimney swifts have declined sharply over the past half century, due in large part to the loss of safe places to roost. We can do our part to help swifts by keeping existing chimneys open, says Andrew Hudson, executive director of Audubon, North Carolina. Park adds sports fields, welcomes public. The Triangle's Jewish community is celebrating newly renovated space in North Raleigh that includes upgraded facilities for sports and recreation and plenty of room to relax and reflect. The David R. Kahn Community Campus on Norwood Road includes a sports facility that can accommodate tennis, basketball, pickleball, and more, in addition to two large fields for games such as softball and flag football. The Jewish Federation of Raleigh Cary holds the grand opening of the 30-acre campus September 22 with festivities from 1:30 p.m. to 4 p.m. The area is open to the public. Our hope for this new modern park and facilities is to become a place where people throughout our region can come and connect and experience a richer shared future together, says Randy Drawas, chairman of the David R. Kahn Community Campus. A piece of Pinehurst gets an upgrade. A Pinehurst hotel that's nearly a century old has been upgraded as the resort continues to diversify its offerings in an effort to attract golfers and non-golfers alike. The Manor Inn, which dates to 1923, is open again after an extensive renovation to the space with 43 rooms. Our intention was to improve upon and modernize the guest experience while still preserving the manor's unique charm, says Bob Dedman Jr., Pinehurst Resort's chief executive officer. I think we've accomplished that in fine fashion. The upgrades will include a new North and South bar, which pays homage to a tournament played in Pinehurst since 1901. The move continues some revamps around Pinehurst, with the former steam plant building becoming the Pinehurst Brewing Company. Interest in golf has slipped as millennials turn their attention elsewhere, although top golf sites such as Pinehurst have continued to draw interest. But the resort has looked at ways to update and broaden its overall offerings in Pinehurst. Raleigh has the startups, but cash is still missing. A new study underscores the opportunities and challenges for the Triangle when it comes to the startup environment that drives so many jobs in the market. The report by Clever Real Estate, a national firm based in St. Louis, rated the Raleigh market as number 9 nationally when it comes to the best metros for startups. The report points to the market's high percentage of workers from the ages of 18 to 34 with a bachelor's degree or higher, exactly the sort of workforce often targeted by startups. The market also gets high marks for a relatively affordable cost of living, but the study points out that startups need a combination of talent and capital, and it's that access to cash where the Triangle comes up short. In Clever's ranking of 50 markets, the Raleigh market was number 30 when it came to opportunities for startups to find investors. Investors buy a piece of Jordan's Hornets. Michael Jordan is turning to a pair of Wall Street hedge fund traders to strengthen the Charlotte Hornets, the NBA franchise Jordan bought in 2010. Jordan is selling a portion of the team to Gabe Plotkin, founder of Melvin Capital, and Daniel Sundheim, founder of D1 Capital. Both firms are based in New York. No terms were disclosed. Jordan will still run the team. Fundamentally, what Michael Jordan is doing is he's taking some money off the table, industry consultant Mark Gannis tells Charlotte Business Journal. And by the way, he's not the only NBA owner that is looking to do something similar. Gannis says Jordan wants to share some of the financial risk and reward while also benefiting from astute business perspective. Financiers have increasingly infiltrated team owner suites as the money in pro sports keeps rising. According to Forbes, the average NFL team is worth $2.57 billion, while the NBA average is $1.9 billion. In February, the financial magazine estimated the Hornets' value at $1.3 billion, or more than seven times the $175 million Jordan paid for the team in 2010. And finally, popular ITB Cafe branches out to Wendell Falls. The owners of a popular cafe in Raleigh's Mordecai neighborhood have branched out. Daniel Whitaker and Patrick Cowden, who co-own the Pharmacy Cafe on the Person Street, opened the Farmhouse Cafe in the Wendell Falls September 16. The Farmhouse Cafe will serve coffee and breakfast in the morning and dinner and drinks later in the day, with a heavy emphasis on local products. Oh, and if you're looking for a smørrebrød, an open-faced Danish sandwich, this is the place. And now we turn to On Banking and Transportation, written by Lauren Onisorge. Boston flights produce the most revenue for RDU. With a whopping $80.6 million in revenue, business travelers probably aren't surprised at which of Raleigh-Durham International Airport's routes is its top generator. According to airline analytics firm OAG, it's Boston's Logan International, long topping lists as a frequent flying destination of RDU travelers. Boston is served by four carriers out of RDU, and it's not surprising that RDU's largest carrier in terms of passengers, Delta Airlines, is among the carriers serving many of RDU's top routes. That includes Atlanta, which ranks number two and is Delta's home base. But what might be surprising to travelers is what's not in the top 10, the nonstop flight to Paris offered by Delta. American Airlines' nonstop to London's Heathrow Airport makes the cut, but the nonstop to Paris, which debuted after a promise of local incentives in 2015, isn't in the top 10. OAG provided the numbers at the behest of Triangle Business Journal, and the numbers include revenue from all carriers. New York's LaGuardia Airport, which has Delta and American flights from RDU, checks in third in total revenue from the Triangle market at $65.3 million. Task force to look for new RDU revenue streams. As Raleigh-Durham International Airport grows its passenger count, worries are mounting that its budget can't keep up when it comes to infrastructure and amenities. So the Regional Transportation Alliance has put together a 12-member task force to strategize ways to maximize revenue. We've got a great growing airport with a not-so-great growing business model problem in terms of funding, says Joe Malazzo, executive director of RTA. RDU has told us that they now see the projected capital funding shortfall north of $1.5 billion within a decade. So Malazzo's group, the same one that stepped up to help reel in Delta Airlines nonstop to Paris, has formed a task force to strategize solutions dubbed the RTA RDU Airport Infrastructure Development, or AID. This is more of a strategy conversation, Malazzo says. We're not looking to ask individual companies to donate money. We're more asking about business models, more ways of sourcing revenue. NC must plan ahead on NCDOT funding. It is clear that our state needs solutions to this funding crisis, and we need them now. However, it is equally important that we develop solutions to prevent this from ever happening again. These initial steps will likely require a cash infusion to the North Carolina Department of Transportation to keep current projects on track and reopen those that were suspended. But with a forward-thinking strategy in place to address our state's infrastructure needs, we can prevent future funding shortfalls, manage risk, create stability, and continue strengthening our roads, railways, ports, and airports water and sewer systems, energy, and broadband infrastructure. And that quote is from Gary Salamito, new North Carolina Chamber of Commerce CEO, writing to business executives about the need to find solutions to the NCDOT cash crunch, which has already prompted 900 stop work orders for highway projects across the state. Ranking Raleigh's biggest banks. Once again, Wells Fargo has managed to keep its top spot as the biggest bank in the Raleigh metro. That's according to new numbers released by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which break down deposit share for cities and states across the nation. But Wells Fargo saw its market share decline slightly in the market from 26.6% overall in metro deposits in 2018 to 23.9% as of June 30. Of Raleigh's top five banks, all but First Citizens actually lost market share over the last year. First Citizens, which is based in Raleigh, rose from 11% of the deposit stake last year to 11.8%. But past the top five, other banks saw incremental rises. That includes SunTrust and First Tennessee, which rose from 4.9% to 5.5% and 2.8% to 4%, respectively. Town Bank, which bought its way into the market with its buy of Paragon, rose from 2.7% in 2018 to 3.4% in the overall deposits as of June 30. BB&T and SunTrust will merge and become Truist Financial Corporation. Here's how the metro leaders shook out by percentage of the market. Wells Fargo, 23.9%. BB&T, 14.8%. Bank of America, 13.2%. First Citizens, 11.8%, PNC, 8.1%, SunTrust, 5.5%, First Tennessee, 4%, Town Bank, 3.4%, North State Bank, 2.5%, and First National Bank, 2%. And now we turn to On Healthcare and Education, written by Seth Thomas Gullish. Precision Bio to launch second cancer drug. Riding on the momentum of its recent initial public offering, Durham-based Precision Biosciences is launching its second potential cancer treatment into clinical trials, a testament to the company's confidence in its scientific and financial position. Coming off the heels of its initial public offering earlier this year, Precision Biosciences has announced the acceptance of its investigational new drug, or IND, application to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for PBCAR20A, it's a treatment for non-Hodgkin lymphoma. The drug follows the company's other drug, BPCAR019-1, a treatment for a different segment of non-Hodgkin lymphoma patients or acute lymphoblastic leukemia, which was brought into clinics earlier this year. Dr. Chris Harry, Precision's chief medical officer, says the two trials will complement each other. There are going to be some tumors that express one target and not the other, so you can think of them as independent in that way, he says. But certainly there are quite a few tumors that actually express both. Still, the move to bring a second drug into clinical trials represents larger operating costs for the company, which will likely not see approval of any drug for years. Harry says the decision was not necessarily based on the performance of the first drug, because the company is still relatively early in the development process. It expects data back from its first drug in the first quarter of 2020. He says the results of the two drugs will likely affect the future pace of the company's development. Harry says the company also plans to bring another candidate into clinic during the first half of 2020. The subsequent target will certainly be impacted by our level of confidence at some point about how well the first two works, he says. There's no doubt about that, because if we have serious reservations about any of our therapies and their likelihood to work, continuing to spend money would be questionable. According to the company, data from its now second clinical trial is expected in 2020. Durham Company wants to turn trees into food. A French CRO turned Triangle Ag Tech Company wants to produce the next age of livestock feed using wood. Durham-based Arbium has been growing in the Triangle since its founding in 2015. The company originally started as a contract research organization, or CRO, in France. Ricardo Ekme, the company's vice president, says the company steadily morphed away from its contract research work toward developing products in the food space based on existing expertise in the company. Its main product, Silpro, is a yeast single-cell protein produced out of wood waste. The company believes the product could serve as an alternative to other fish or plant-based protein sources for livestock feed, though the protein could be used in an expanded platform or products in years to come. Ekme says the company thought its technology was better suited for the U.S. ecosystem. We really look toward the U.S. as being the linchpin of being able to accelerate this technology and leverage the research available here, he says. It's no accident that we ended up in the Research Triangle area. We can tap into a wealth of resources, including human resources. The company employs about 30 people total, with locations in Paris and Norton, Virginia. Ekme says about 20 currently work in the Durham location. The company is currently in a demonstration phase, taking its product to conferences and potential customers to validate its use as a protein ingredient. Duke Health gets expansion approval. A series of state approvals will greatly benefit one of the Triangle's largest hospital systems as it looks to expand in Wake and Durham counties. The North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, according to its Certificate of Need, or CON, filings, has approved four different projects totaling over $12 million for Duke Health, including two new ambulatory surgical centers and a diagnostic center. The system received the green light for the construction of a new gastrointestinal, or GI, center with four endoscopy rooms at its planned green level expansion in western Wake County. In addition, DHHS's most recent approvals included another GI ambulatory surgical facility in North Durham. According to its CON application with the state, the development will cost $3.5 million. The pair of GI expansions show an interest in the company's expanding ambulatory GI offerings, a landscape with increasing competition from private practices who claim lower patient costs. Adding to its list of approvals, DHHS approved Duke University Hospital to expand its facilities to include 34 more acute care beds at a cost of $4.7 million. Once complete, the hospital will house 1,062 acute care beds. Duke Health also received approval for a $590 million diagnostic center by adding mammography to an existing diagnostic facility at Duke Imaging Services on Cary Parkway. Some e-cig flavors use potential carcinogen. The e-cigarette industry has come under increasing fire and scrutiny in recent months, but the growing trend of bans on certain flavors may be driving consumers directly toward a flavor with its own unique dangers, according to a Duke University study. Sven-Erik Jort, a Duke professor of the Department of Anesthesiology, has recently published findings in JAMA Internal Medicine demonstrating that a potential carcinogen, Pulgone, is found in high levels in Mint 1 and menthol-flavored electronic cigarette liquids. The chemical's levels in the products is one of many emerging concerns regarding e-cigarette use, exacerbated by reports of more than 400 patients being diagnosed with a mysterious illness linked to vaping, including six deaths. Pulgone is known to have carcinogenic properties, and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, has banned the chemical as a food additive. But Jordan notes the FDA does not regulate Pulgone's presence in e-cigarettes, which may result in unsafe consumption of the chemical. What needs to be understood is the level that you are being exposed to by using these products is much higher than what the FDA would find acceptable if it was found in food, he says. What we saw is that all these chemicals were analyzed, no matter what level of consumption, is they are being exposed to concerning levels of Pulgone. Pulgone is a common component of mint and menthol flavoring. The research analyzed different brands of traditional menthol cigarettes against e-cigarettes to determine the levels contained in the products. And finally, how NC State wants to use ultrasound to fight cancer. Thanks to the curiosity of NC State University Assistant Professor Marie Muller, ultrasounds may one day be used to assess bone structure or even cancer. Muller is researching new techniques for ultrasound devices for screening for osteoporosis or distinguishing between tumor types. The technique relies on the previously assumed shortfall of ultrasound, the inability for ultrasound waves to provide clear images of complicated, dense structures such as bones. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Real Estate page written by Caleb Harshberger. Toll Brothers selling Briar Creek Hassan Tree Clubs. After decades of building its triangle presence, a Pennsylvania-based home building giant is planning a major sale of two prominent country clubs. Toll Brothers is nearing a deal to sell the Tony Briar Creek Country Club and the Hassan Tree Club in Wake Forest to Dallas-based Club Corps, one of the country's largest owners of private clubs, according to multiple sources. Additionally, in a written notice, Toll Brothers recently informed NC Commerce that new ownership is coming to the clubs. It also announced the company would cease its operation of both clubs effective October 28. The clubs are not expected to cease operations since Club Corps expects to close the deal before the October date and hire back most of the existing employees, sources confirm. Even though Toll is closing its operations at this location, operations are expected to be continued by the buyer, including the hiring of a number of employees. The WARN, Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification notice reads, under federal law, companies must inform state regulators when they are planning mass layoffs following a merger, closure, or restructuring of operations. Toll Brothers did not comment on the pending deal. Club Corps' portfolio includes a dozen golf and business clubs in North Carolina, including Pinehurst Resort. In the Triangle, Club Corps manages City Club Raleigh, Carolina Club Chapel Hill, Devil's Ridge Golf Club Holly Springs, Lockmere Golf Club Cary, and Neuse Golf Club Clayton. Briar Creek Country Club has more than 1,200 homes. It features an 18-hole Arnold Palmer signature course, 40,000-square-foot clubhouse, three pools, tennis, and more. Monthly membership dues come in at $476, with a $7,500 initiation fee. The Hassan Tree Club in Wake Forest features a 16,500-square-foot clubhouse, three resort-style pools, tennis, and more. Monthly membership dues are $450, with an $11,000 membership fee. Cary, Durham, among top places in U.S. to buy a home. Two Triangle cities are among the best in the country to buy a home, according to a new report by WalletHub. The report found Cary and Durham are among the top 10 places in the country to buy a house. WalletHub scored the cities based on affordability, economic environment, and real estate market rank. Cary came in at number 4 on the list. The town in western Wake County was 7th in real estate market rank and 3rd in affordability and economic environment. Behind Cary, Durham came in at number 8. The Bull City was 4th in real estate market rank and 37th in affordability and economic environment. Go Triangle increases affordable housing offer. A proposed high-rise in downtown Raleigh will have to wait a little longer for the city's approval, but the clock is ticking as Go Triangle works to make sure its proposed bus station in Raleigh meets deadlines imposed by rules covering federal grants. The city council wants to be sure the historic nature of the district is maintained before approving a rezoning. The council held a public hearing September 17 to consider a rezoning request by the Research Triangle Regional Public Transportation Authority, or GO Triangle, to allow for up to 40 stories of development on a 1.76-acre property on Southwest Street. And while the authority sweetened its initial offer to include affordable housing in the development, it wasn't enough to solicit a vote the same day. Meanwhile, federal funding restrictions have Go Triangle on a deadline, with work required to be underway by 2020 to keep federal funds. Texas developer will build homes in Zebulon. A Texas-based developer has announced an addition to its portfolio of properties in the Triangle with another new residential development. LGI Homes is charting a new 490-home neighborhood called Autumn Lakes at 517 Crackling Court in Zebulon. Home prices will start in the $280,000s with layouts that include five different floor plans ranging from a 1,500-square-foot single-story home with three bedrooms to a 28,000-square-foot five-bedroom home. Featured amenities include children's playgrounds, a covered picnic area, a recreation field, a dog park, and a walking path around the neighborhood pond. The median household income in Zebulon is around $50,000, according to census data, and the median property value is around $145,000. And finally, Wegmans makes big bet on the Triangle. Wegmans is betting big on the Triangle as the grocery giant from Rochester, New York, prepares to open its first store at the end of September. The grand opening for the Raleigh location, the first of six stores planned for the region, is set for 7 a.m. September 29 at 1200 Waketown Drive. The store will be the company's 100th location. With plans for multiple Wegmans in the Triangle, it represents a radical departure from the traditionally conservative pace at which the grocery expands. Chairman Danny Wegman says the company has come a long way over the decades. Hard to believe, he says. It's funny. I think when I was 10, we probably had 10 stores. Much of the growth happened in the last few decades, but still, Wegman's president and CEO, Colleen Wegman, says six new stores announced for a single market is much faster than usual for the company. We're placing a big bet here, she says. We're excited about the market and hope they like us there. It's a big deal for us. The Triangle checks all the boxes for Wegmans, with the two biggest metrics being population growth and quality of education. Colleen Wegman says higher education correlates closely with interest in food, and as a grocery store that sells higher-end food products, Wegmans is looking to invest in areas where people are willing to spend more. In addition to the full assemblage of groceries found in most 100,000-square-foot grocery stores, Wegmans also has several stations featuring perishable goods such as meats, seafood, and cheese, which can often be on the pricier side due to their quality. And now we turn to the On Business section, written by David Pertell. Wilmington's hospital moves closer to being sold. Officials in New Hanover County on September 16 took another step toward the potential sale of the area's county-owned hospital system. New Hanover County commissioners voted 3-2 in favor of a resolution to explore the sale of New Hanover Regional Medical Center. The resolution allows officials to develop a request for proposals from those interested in acquiring the medical center, according to a release from the county. County leaders will also consider the potential for partnership. The hospital serves 40,000 patients every year. Though owned by the county, the hospital receives zero county tax dollars. That makes it the largest county-owned hospital in the U.S. that does not receive county-owned support. It is the third largest county hospital in the nation. HNRMC has facilities throughout New Hanover, Brunswick, and Pender counties, as well as in Jacksonville and Whiteville. In August, John Gizdick, the hospital system's president and CEO, told Triangle Business Journal that looking ahead to the uncertainty of healthcare in the industry, it seems smart to explore options from a position of strength. Gizdick said several factors led to considering a sale. The population of its service area is expected to double within 15 years, raising the question of how to pay for the $1 billion in investments needed to maintain quality health care. And Seth Thomas Gullidge also contributed to that report. Company Balts Bay for NC Mountains. A California-based premium apparel maker is moving most of its operations to a rural community east of Asheville, citing the Bay Area's tight labor market and high housing costs. Kits Bow, which makes apparel for mountain bikers, has more than 20 employees working in a community north of San Francisco, with some being offered transfers to the company's new manufacturing operation in Old Fort, North Carolina, off Interstate 40 between Black Mountain and Marion. The company's headquarters and two key employees will remain in Petaluma for now. Kitsbo CEO David Billstrom told the San Francisco Business Times from North Carolina, where he's now based. Asked whether the headquarters will move, he said, "That's an open-ended question. I have a labor problem, not a headquarters problem at the moment," says Billstrom, who is ramping up production to meet demand. Asked whether he approached the state of California about incentives to remain in the state, Billstrom said he did not. "I've never heard of a company our size getting incentives to stay," he said. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to A Better World. First, we read the column written by Jennifer Toll Whiteside, who is the president and CEO of the North Carolina Community Foundation. The headline, Guidelines for Giving After Natural Disasters. Everyone understands the devastation of natural disasters. Hurricanes, fires, and floods have had significant impacts on our people, places, and economy. Hurricane season is always a special concern for North Carolina. Last year, our state was ravaged by Hurricane Florence, while many communities were still recovering from Hurricane Matthew. North Carolinians understand the long-term effects of hurricane damage and the years it can take to recover. Dorian, although not nearly as damaging as it could have been, impacted areas still recovering from previous storms. While we were largely spared, the devastation in the Bahamas has been horrific. In 2018, the United States suffered from 14 natural disasters, each of which caused more than $1 billion worth of damage. Although not all the devastation has been tallied, the total comes to more than $90 billion. When it comes to charitable giving in response to a disaster, we know that disaster relief donations are usually immediate. The majority of dollars are given in 2 months following the disaster. We also know that about 30% of American households made disaster-related gifts in 2017 and 2018. As you consider giving after a disaster, here are 10 priorities to consider. Pay attention to the plight of others. Understand that each of us does not have the same advantages and resources. The burden of natural disasters falls disproportionately on the disenfranchised. Determine what kind of programs you want to support. What are your values and priorities? What matters to you? Disaster relief has many aspects. Immediate needs can cover emergency housing, water and food, or search and rescue efforts. Rebuilding and recovery efforts are often identified weeks after a disaster. Remember that it will take some time for the full range of needs to emerge. Power loss, transportation outages, and flood-damaged homes may be top of mind, but it takes a while to truly understand the impact that the disaster has had on people's lives. Recovery will take a long time, and flexible funding will be needed throughout. Do some research. Your local community foundation is a great place to offer information about reputable organizations working in disaster recovery and resiliency. Understand that scammers and con artists often use disasters to take advantage of people. Do not send clothes or other household items unless specifically asked to do so. Organizations and individuals report that financial support is more helpful. Ask questions. Does the organization have experience working in disaster relief and in the area where the disaster has occurred? Does the local community work with and trust this organization? Consider making another gift in a few weeks or months after the disaster fades from our minds. It takes months and years for a community to recover. Give without restrictions. The needs after a disaster change so rapidly. The money you send for food may be needed more for cleaning supplies by the time it reaches its destination. And consider an unrestricted gift to an organization's general disaster relief fund once you trust the organization knows how to utilize your dollars. With research and thoughtful giving, you can be sure your dollars make the maximum impact. And now in nonprofit news, Golf Community helps out well-known Durham pair. The Golf Community came together earlier this month to support Durham's Fran James and Norman James, who have faced significant health issues. On September 5, the film Loopers, The Caddy's Long Walk, narrated by actor Bill Murray, played at the Carolina Theater in Durham. The film details the history of caddies. Fran James was an outstanding junior golfer at Northern Durham High School and played at Marshall University. Last year, she was closing Hillendale Golf Course when her golf cart was struck by a car in a hit-and-run accident. She suffered multiple injuries, including serious spinal fractures in her right leg. Norman James, a star football player at Northern, was diagnosed with colorectal cancer in April. The event raised a total of about $19,000. Organizer said. A Place at the Table in Raleigh gets bank support. Raleigh's A Place at the Table is getting a lift from Town Bank. As a part of their 2019 shareholder meeting, Town Bank provided donations to 12 nonprofits, one in each region the bank serves. Connie Thames, a senior vice president at Town Bank, recently presented a check to Maggie Kane, the executive director of A Place at the Table. The restaurant in downtown Raleigh allows patrons to pay as they are able. Wake Tech, Durham Tech get big gifts for teaching technology. Wake Technical Community College will use a large federal grant to make a technology purchase that will be training students for jobs in the Triangle. The National Science Foundation has granted Wake Tech more than $422,000, which will allow the school to purchase advanced cameras and other necessary equipment for job training. The new capabilities will support courses in technical art, photogrammetry, and technical animation. The new course will prepare students for work in the simulation industry and enable two new certificate programs in technical art and technical animation. And thanks to a $500,000 gift, Durham Technical Community College will be getting a serious technology upgrade. Following the donation made by an anonymous donor, the college announced it would use the funding to upgrade its information technology program and resources. The central focus is an advanced innovation lab for software development and web development students, which students will use to learn how to solve problems to satisfy end users' needs. And finally, Chapel Hill businesses rally to assist in hurricane relief. Some businesses in Chapel Hill plan a fundraiser September 22 to help with Hurricane Dorian relief in the Bahamas. Al's Burger Shack is joining with other businesses in the Midway District, including the Baxter Bar and Arcade, Beer Study, Bell Tree, and Rumors Boutique for the event from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. Al's will provide a Bahamian supper for $12 per plate, and there will be live music from Liquid Pleasure and others. The block party style event will be open to the public. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, the editor of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, DOT's cash flow issues already hurting businesses. As many of you have been keeping a close eye on the macro indicators of the economy, tariffs, currency, interest rates, and global unrest, there may be a silent killer of jobs among us that is largely going unnoticed. The North Carolina Department of Transportation is in a cash crunch, and because of a legislatively mandated cash balance ratio, it is mothballing pre-construction and design work of road and bridge projects. At last count, the NCDOT has doled out more than 1,000 stop work orders. NCDOT vendors, such as surveyors, engineering firms, and land development personnel, have been told not to bill the agency for any of the project work under the stop order list. This sudden revenue hit for North Carolina businesses is now resulting in businesses laying people off. Already, according to industry groups and several individual companies, more than 400 jobs have been eliminated so far. We have no choice at this point, says Seppi Saidi, CEO of Raleigh Seppi Incorporated, which has laid off 25 people so far. The longer these projects are dormant, the tougher it is going to be for all of us. Troy Dover, with Hillsboro-based Summit Design and Engineering Services, says NCDOT's actions have impacted 58 of the 440 positions in the company. We are in a very tough position. This is a much bigger issue than just the impact on engineering firms, he says. Saidi and Dover are far from alone. The industry group representing engineering firms is keeping daily tabs of the job losses and states conditions are getting worse in the pre-construction and land development sector. If matters get worse, even the state's construction industry will have to start downsizing, the group notes. What makes it tough for the NCDOT right now is the hurricane-related disaster work that must be completed despite the cash balance remaining perilously close to the legal limit. Couple that with some $300 million already spent to settle a lawsuit involving the MAP Act, a 1987 law that unconstitutionally allowed the state to reserve land without buying it, government check writers are busy. Government-funded infrastructure work has a ripple effect that is far broader and deeper than one could imagine. Remember the Marshall Plan after World War II? The program was enacted in 1948 to aid Western Europe in rebuilding its infrastructure. Roads, bridges, buildings, and utilities. The U.S. poured more than $13 billion into the plan, and finally, Europe was able to stand on its own. The U.S. benefited because American companies sold the products and services to build the continent. To shore up NCDOT's fiscal health and get the state's infrastructure work started, North Carolina lawmakers may have to make one of two moves. Divert hundreds of millions of dollars from the state's rainy day fund, which has a balance of $1 billion plus, or move money from the general fund. The big question right now is whether there is an appetite for an industry-specific taxpayer bailout on Jones Street. That conversation needs to start now, before NCDOT's fiscal sickness spreads its germs across the state's broader economy. And now turning to general news in the Triangle Business Journal. Armed with $50 million in funding, Policy Genius preps for move into Durham. And this article is written by Lauren Onisorge. For Policy Genius CEO Jennifer Fitzgerald, Durham means a growth opportunity. For downtown Durham, Policy Genius means jobs. And for the entrepreneurs in the Triangle's burgeoning entrepreneurship network, it means mentorship. In an exclusive interview, Fitzgerald says she and her company are open to building relationships in their new community and that Policy Genius is already hiring for the dual headquarters it plans to build in downtown Durham. That's as the actual lease has yet to be signed. Fitzgerald's entrepreneurship journey began 7 years ago. She was a consultant with McKinsey & Company, working in consumer financial services and consulting with insurance giants. She saw a real problem around distribution, she recalls. Not just distribution, but how to reach a younger, more digital consumer, she says, noting that insurance companies at the time didn't really have a system in place. So after numerous conversations with colleague-turned-co-founder Francois Delam, she leapt off the entrepreneurial cliff. She and Delam quit their jobs to start what would become Policy Genius. But starting an online platform for insurance was no easy task, particularly in New York, where recruiting challenges plagued the firm early on. You have a lot of competition in terms of big brand name Fortune 100 companies, she says. Raising money, too, proved to be an issue. Insurance is a complex vertical. When we started, insurance was relatively unknown to venture investors, technology investors, she says. Like many entrepreneurs, she turned to angel investors, friends, and family for the initial cash, and as the company gained traction, venture attention increased. Fitzgerald attributes her firm's fundraising success to persistence. When you're a first-time founder, there are question marks about your ability to build a real business, she writes. And it's always challenging even when you're successful, because every new milestone that you reach, you always have to have an answer for when you're going to get to the next one. To date, Policy Genius has raised more than $50 million, but its biggest problem continues to be recruiting. It's our ability to hire fast enough to be at the volume we were generating in the customer side, she says. And that's where Durham comes in. We're in a really strong economy right now, she says. The labor market is very tight, and I think that's especially the case in New York. Expanding to a second geography and allowing us to grow simultaneously in two markets makes a lot more sense. Talent dictated Polygenius's pick of Durham. Fitzgerald says the presence of the universities became essential to the selection, as did Raleigh-Durham International Airport's flight schedule to New York. Site visits followed, as did numerous conversations with local companies on talent. And so far, the plan is working. We are starting to hire right now, she says. We have teams that are interviewing right now. The plan is to create a headquarters that mirrors what Policy Genius has in New York, but in downtown Durham. And Timothy Downs, the vice president of economic development at the Greater Durham Chamber of Commerce, calls it validating to what developers have envisioned in downtown Durham. I'd like to think that we'll look back in several years and see Policy Genius as the beginning of a wave of new employment downtown, he says. But it's also a boon for the entrepreneurship community. Cary-based angel investor David Gardner says firsthand entrepreneurship experience, like what Fitzgerald might offer, can be a valuable tool. It would be great if she really does take the time to meet and try to help entrepreneurs, he says. Entrepreneurial activist Chris Hively agrees. Hively, vice president of innovation at Techstar, says every person who has some success adds to the mix. You see, this is a community of people, and each one of us has something to offer that nobody else has, he says. For Jennifer, it is the experience of operating in New York City, her experience in raising $50 million, not too many of those around here, her leap from a corporation, and of course, her journey as a woman founder. She is one of many that keep coming to the triangle. Each one in itself can be viewed as just one point, but together, they can create a larger wave that everyone gets to enjoy. Fitzgerald says engagement with the entrepreneurship community is already part of the plan. She says she has existing relationships, particularly with the MetLife Techstars Accelerator in Cary, and she hints at the possibility of university partnerships. We received a super warm welcome to the market. A lot of the local universities and colleges have reached out, she says. Capital campaigns bringing billions into triangle economy. This article is written by Seth Thomas Gulledge. Billions of dollars are flowing into the triangle thanks to the rapid pace of big capital campaigns by the region's major universities, promising to transform not only iconic landmarks and locations on the campuses, but the larger economies they support. NC State University and UNC Chapel Hill are in the midst of billion-dollar campaigns less than 2 years since Duke University closed its own $3.85 billion campaign. That huge influx of cash is funding projects central to the identity of the universities, such as renovation to Duke's iconic chapel, the completion of NC State's bell tower, and more than $65 million in new art for UNC's Ackland Art Museum. But it is also supporting thousands of new scholarships, launching new programs, and raising new state-of-the-art buildings and laboratories across the Triangle. UNC's campus has already resulted in the largest single donation in the state's history, a $100 million gift from PPD founder Fred Eshelman for its School of Pharmacy. Despite UNC's recent string of turmoil, including former Chancellor Carol Folt's sudden ouster, the money seems to continue pouring in, rising from $2.58 billion in April to $2.88 billion in August, with still 40 months to go before the end of its campaign. "We need a good economy. We need markets to stay where they are," says David Routh, UNC's Vice Chancellor for Development. "When people have appreciated assets, it's a little easier for them to feel they have gift amounts they can part with, so we need to get lucky with a decent economy." He says at the pace the campaign has been going, UNC would be well above its goal by closing. During fiscal year 2019, UNC reported raising $602 million for its campaign, whereas NC State reported $220 million. NCSU's campaign is scheduled to run until the end of 2021, and UNC is planning for the end of 2022. If both achieve their goals, the Triangle will see another $1.5 billion in additional funding on the two campuses, much of which may be used for facility improvements and campus transformations. But even after closing, universities expect to see increased annual donations. Duke University, for example, closed its historic $3.85 billion campaign in 2017, but still reported more than $507 million in gifts in fiscal year 2019. That huge inflow of cash, according to university officials, has much larger ramifications than better universities in the region. Brian Sisko, NC State's Vice Chancellor for University Advancement, says the business community, the heightened caliber of programs and scholarships guarantees more workforce and more research for companies to utilize. "The research that we do is critical in developing new technologies and providing the intellectual property that the state and region can use to enhance the business climate and the products they produce," he says. "That relationship as a feeder of students and a feeder of research is felt in dramatic ways in this part of the country." Last year, the three universities produced 41 different spin-out companies and produced more than 247 patents. Nearly all of those companies were launched by or based on faculty of the universities, something Michael Schoenfeld, Duke's Vice President for Public Affairs and Government Relations, says is perhaps the most important way universities drive the economy. "We are a net importer of talent to this region," he says. Meanwhile, the huge cash flow the universities are seeing is creating millions in contracts and services in Durham, Chapel Hill, and Raleigh. NC State raised $45 million to renovate Carmichael Gymnasium. Duke also saw massive construction funded by its campaign, such as the nearly $20 million renovation of Duke Chapel, part of $538 million raised for campus transformation. And with NC Central University, St. Augustine's University, and Shaw University all planning capital campaigns, and Meredith College closing its recent $90 million campaign, the ripple effects are expected to continue stretching thanks to the generosity of alumni and foundations. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll return to the Viewpoint page to read another column written by Abe Madcower, who is the editor-in-chief of the Sports Business Journal. The headline, "Influence of Women's Sports Growing." Earlier this summer, it was debated just how much the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team's World Cup win would amplify coverage and interest around women's sports. Unequivocally, it had a profound impact. As the storylines of women's sports were a significant and consistent thread through the summer of sports business, there was an increase at the gate in sponsorship, in media coverage, and in social discussions, and it felt notable. The National Women's Soccer League clearly benefited. In the 38 games played since the World Cup, the league averaged 9,168 fans per game, a sizable increase of 51% over the 6,069 before the World Cup. At the local level, the Portland Thorns continued to raise the bar for women's sports and set a single-game record by drawing more than 25,000 to Providence Park in August. That figure broke the previous club record of more than 22,000, which the team drew just weeks earlier. The Thorns are the most inspiring team business story in women's sports. The women's nationals team were pop culture stars, and attendance for their victory tour ranged from a sellout of nearly 20,000 at Allianz Field to 37,000 at the Rose Bowl to nearly 50,000 at Heinz Field. But it wasn't just in the United States where women's soccer benefited. The Women's Super League in the UK saw more than 30,000 attend a Man City Man U WSL match at Etihad Stadium, a new high for the league. More than 60,000 attended the six WSL games over opening weekend in England, a 12-fold increase from the 2018 to 2019 season. The London Times wrote the landmark weekend and offered a glimpse of just how big women's soccer could become. The numbers were smaller for the Women's International Champions Cup, which drew more than 8,000 for its title match in Kerry. But that was better than the event's inaugural year in 2018 at Miami's Hard Rock Stadium, and founder Relevant Sport also landed Budweiser as the Cup's first presenting partner. Let's not limit the attention to soccer. Women dominated the tennis headlines this summer, led by the emergence of 15-year-old Coco Gauff. London's The Guardian noted that Gauff's matches at Wimbledon attracted the largest TV audiences and the most boisterous roars on Henman Hill. She later became the youngest player to reach the U.S. Open's third round in more than two decades, and her post-match interview with Naomi Osaka was one of the most talked-about moments of the event. In addition to Gauff, 19-year-old Canadian Bianca Andreescu was another new name on the scene, winning the U.S. Open, and the New York Times wrote the new generation of female tennis players represent various races and nationalities. The WNBA introduced new commissioner Kathy Engelbert in July, and she has received strong early reviews. The league also took its All-Star game to Las Vegas for the first time, drawing more than 9,000 fans, with Kobe Bryant, Megan Rapinoe, and Chris Paul taking in the action. Finally, one can't overlook the impact and influence of Simone Biles, who had a historic performance at the U.S. Gymnastics Championships in Kansas City in August. The embattled sport proved it could still be a draw, as the four-day total of 33,894 was a record for the event. Even Biles was surprised by the publicity around it, saying, "Not too many people pay attention to gymnastics, especially in a non-Olympic year." There was also the powerful ad campaign from the U.S. Tennis Association. And she is hashtag women worth watching, which ran throughout the U.S. Open and had Billie Jean King lead with a pointed narration. And we're going to stop there, as we've actually run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored, so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.